Hello and welcome to Ask Margot Today. I'm Margot de Coatsworth and I'm here to answer your questions that may be keeping you stuck in life. I've been watching an interesting chap on YouTube recently who's kind of a success coach and also a pastor. And I really resonate with his message, which is totally underpinned by his acknowledgement of God being not just his source, but his focus and the reason he has the life he has, doing the work he's doing that he loves, and also achieving the results he's getting. I feel compelled to state that in this privileged place I have bringing you this show, I also see myself as beholden to God for every good thing that there is in my life, every idea, every piece of understanding, every initiative, my creativity, all of it is enabled because of Him. I talk about the universe so that I can reach as many people as possible, but the universe to me is just another name for God. In no way do I want my using the term the universe to diminish or undermine in any way my full acknowledgement of God as my source in all things. Just before we have our first question, I do want to say that all during the weeks between these shows, things pop up in my life and I think, oh, you'd better walk your talk, or what would you say to someone who sent a question about this to Ask Margot? What would I do? I need to be doing what I say everyone else needs to do. It's interesting to think about this, and it's challenging for me. I want to be walking my talk. So otherwise that would just make me a hypocrite and can't be having that. This show, therefore, is a bit of a challenge to me. And even though I say you must do this and you must not do that, I'm always, always speaking to myself as much as to the person who's asked this question. So it's not just about my full belief system, but the evidence I've seen of these principles, these life principles, working and how they can actually change our lives for the better. These questions must not be just what I talk about, but also what I do. Otherwise, I should be fired immediately. Okay, our first question today is from Henrietta. Margot, I've heard you say that success and fulfillment come when you offer more than you get back, that we shouldn't aim to take, but to give. But many people feel that if they give too much, they'll be taken advantage of. How can giving be more than you expect? How can that principle work in life? You're not the first person to have talked to me about this, Henrietta. The idea of giving more than you expect to receive may feel counterintuitive. It goes against our instinct around fairness, and we tend to think, if I give more, I should get more. But when you shift your mindset about value for you, seeing that it's what you bring brings value, not what you get back, you open an entirely new form of exchange. The more genuine help, insight, or service you can provide, the more doors open. Not just the ones you saw, but the ones you didn't expect. People who hold back because they measure too lightly or tightly what they give end up limiting their growth. Let's look at this more closely. When you bring value, whether it's genuinely helpful in terms of a comment or a solution or some insight or a surprising task completed, you shift the dynamic from transaction to relationship. The person you serve begins to see you as someone who makes things happen, who adds to their world, enriches it. They don't just remember what you did, they remember how you made them feel. And that's the thing that makes us tick. If you make someone feel seen, supported, you are elevating them. And there's that boomerang effect. What you project comes back to you. So I always like to look at things from a metaphysical and a scientific point of view. I love that stuff. When you act from a place of contribution, your nervous system enters a state of generosity and connection, both of which are biologically beneficial. Studies show that helping others releases oxytocin and dopamine. It lowers cortisol and increases resilience. So your body is actually literally aligned with giving. Meanwhile, your intention sends out an energetic signal. I'm here to add. Think about that. I love it. When you meet somebody, when you go into a meeting or a gathering or connect with someone, think to yourself, what am I going to add? Not what can I get? That signal magnetizes response. The universe responds by aligning situations, people, and resources towards you, often in ways that exceed your original ask. This is what you might call the overflow effect. So, number one, know your value zone. What unique help can you provide? Use your gifts, training, and insight. Number two, deliver without immediate expectation. Do the job, send the insight, complete the task, then step back. Number three, notice the overflow. Watch for phone calls, new connections, unexpected opportunities. Number four, reinvest the return. The money, the favour, the contract. Let that fund your next wave of giving. And five, stay grounded. Giving is not self-destruction. Boundaries matter. But when within your boundary, you can over-deliver. I always say, if this has not been your modus operandi to date, then try it as an experiment. You can't poo-hoo something like this that you haven't even tried. And yes, sometimes people take advantage and some value won't be recognised. But it's not about aiming to get merely what you deserve when you can create something you didn't even know was possible by being a giver of value. So expect no return, but also expect the universe to deliver exponential return on the terms it sees fit. I don't think those two things are mutually exclusive. So you don't look for immediate gratification, but you expect your life to be better because of this attitude of yours in giving. The return may be at some other time or some other way, but that's really not your concern. Give more than you expect, Henrietta. Serve before you're served. Plant the seed without counting the harvest and see what grows from there. It is an exciting experiment, and it's a great thing to do if you want to take a new approach to something that's been bothering you. Our next question is from James. Margot, I keep delaying decisions, big ones, small ones, everything. Part of me thinks I'm being careful, but another part of me wonders if I'm actually holding my life back. Why is indecision so exhausting, and how do I break out of it? Oh, this is such an interesting question. Indecision is one of the most expensive habits a person can have, James. It drains time, energy, confidence, and momentum. And it does it quietly, so people don't even notice the cost until much later when they look back and think, oh, I've wasted that time, that opportunity. Most people think indecision protects them from making the wrong choice. But in reality, indecision in itself is a choice, and it's almost always the wrong one. When you sit in uncertainty for too long, your nervous system stays in a low-grade threat state. Your brain keeps searching for danger, looking for information, perfection, waiting for reassurance that doesn't arrive. As a result, cortisol rises, clarity drops. Get that one? Clarity drops. And the prefrontal cortex, the part responsible for good decision making, actually becomes less effective. It's like you're practicing disempowering yourself. In other words, the longer you wait to decide, the harder it becomes to decide. So that's the biology. Now let's look at the subconscious. Your subconscious mind is designed to follow direction. When you take too long to choose, you're not giving it any. You're running two conflicting programs. I want this, and I'm afraid of this. So the subconscious doesn't know which instruction to obey, and it freezes, or it follows the strongest one, which in your case is probably, I'm afraid of this. And then your body follows. People feel tired, foggy, unmotivated, not because they lack purpose, but because they lack direction, which is also motivation. Think of people in your life who say, I'm so confused. They are indecisive people. Energetically, indecision communicates scarcity. It says to the universe, I don't trust myself, I don't trust the path, I don't trust the outcome. And the universe simply mirrors what you project. Compare that with decisive people. They don't make perfect decisions. They make decisions and then they make those decisions right. They treat each decision as a step forward, not a final verdict. And life meets them with momentum. Now, let me give you something practical. This is a great analogy, I think, and the real reason that indecision is so exhausting. Every unmade decision keeps your brain open in like multiple tabs of opportunities or possibilities. Just like on a computer, too many tabs open and the system slows down. Shut the tabs, even imperfectly, and everything speeds up. So how do you break the pattern? First, lower the emotional stakes. Most decisions are not life sentences. They are course corrections. You choose, you learn, you adjust. Second, give yourself a deadline, a real one. Not, I'll think about it. Try this. I'll make this decision by 4 p.m. today. You'll be amazed how the mind cooperates when you give it a container to work within. Thirdly, ask a better question. Not what's the right choice, but which choice moves me forward? Or another one is, which is the one that resonates most with me? Finally, teach your subconscious that you can be trusted with your own life. Every time you make a clear decision, even a small one, you reinforce the identity of someone who knows what they want. And that identity becomes a magnet for opportunity. Indecision is really fear in disguise, fear of getting it wrong. Decision is self-trust in action. And once you choose, the universe can finally respond. You are the genie. Give your genie good instructions, James. Right, our next question is from Lucy, who says, I'm realizing I've accepted jobs, relationships, and situations that weren't actually what I wanted. At the time, it felt practical, but now I feel like I've been living at half capacity. Why do we settle and how do we stop? We settle for one simple reason, Lucy, and that is we don't really believe we can have what we truly want. That's not laziness, it's not lack of clarity, it's kind of self-protection. When you reach for something big, the right partner, the right home, the right opportunity, you expose yourself to possibility and also to disappointment. And many people unconsciously decide that disappointment is too painful, so they aim lower. They convince themselves that a smaller dream is a safer dream. But here's the truth. Settling isn't safety. It's slow self-abandonment. Let's look at the science behind this. The brain has a built-in threat detection system. It's called the amygdala. It cannot tell the difference between emotional risk and physical danger. So when you think about asking for more money, more love, more respect, the amygdala may interpret as a threat and shut you down. You call it being realistic. Your brain calls it avoiding danger. not taking risks. And add to that the subconscious programming we inherit, messages like don't be greedy, don't expect too much, be grateful for what you've already got. And before you know it, you've built a life based on other people's limits. Energetically, settling sends a very specific signal. I don't believe better is available to me. Well, that's always rubbish. And life will mirror what you believe, not what you silently hope for. I actually think hope is very passive and not much use to us. When you tolerate less, you attract less. When you decide you deserve more, you attract more. There is amazing research on this. Psychologists call it self-efficacy. Your belief in your ability to create what you want. People with high self-efficacy take risks, make changes, leave situations that shrink them. People with low self-efficacy stay in the familiar, even when the familiar is painful and really stunts their growth. Here's the good news. Self-efficacy can be learned. It grows every time you refuse to settle. You can teach it to yourself. So how do you stop settling? Try this as a process. First, tell yourself the truth. Not the polite version, not the I should be grateful version, the real version. Ask yourself, is this worthy of me? Does this reflect my value? And what I like, does it spark joy? Secondly, increase the standard, not the struggle. People think wanting more means working harder. It doesn't necessarily. It means choosing differently, choosing better. Raise your standard. That might be your hourly rate. Who knows? Then life rises to meet it. Thirdly, let discomfort be information, not intimidation. When you reach for something better, your nervous system goes into unfamiliar territory. That doesn't necessarily mean it's a sign to stop. It's just a signal that you're upgrading. You're stepping into a little bit of foreign ground. Fourthly, practice micro-courage. Not huge leaps, but small refusals. No to disrespect. No to crumbs. No to situations that require you to be less. Each micro-courage enforces and reinforces your identity as someone who doesn't settle. Understand that settling is a habit, and so is rising. Every time you choose the life that fits you instead of the life that's merely available, you teach your subconscious that you can be trusted with your own expansion. And once that identity settles in, settling becomes impossible. Never ask, is this enough to get by? Say, does it honour who I really am, who I'm becoming? When you choose from that place, Lucy, you won't settle anymore. Our next question is from Bob. And he says, I've been told that money comes from value, not time, but I still feel stuck in old thinking around money being hard to earn or limited. How do we shift this practically and mentally? A question we've probably all touched on at some point, because it gets to the heart of one of the most damaging myths we carry, and that is money is earned through effort and hours and sacrifice. In reality, money doesn't flow like that. It flows towards value, not labour. People aren't paid for how hard they work. They are paid for the result they create. A person can dig holes in the ground for 12 hours a day and still struggle financially. Another can solve a specific problem for someone in 10 minutes and be paid very well. Why? Because money isn't a reward for exhaustion. It's a reward for transformation, for benefit, for change you can bring. People pay for what changes their life, their business, or their emotional state. Or as I sometimes say, their health, their wealth, or their harmony, not for the hours you spent doing it. This is where most of us get stuck. People measure their worth through effort instead of impact. They think money is scarce and it's limited and it's finite, but it's not. Our perspective is the only finite thing. Let's look at the science. Our subconscious has something called the reticular activating system. I've talked about that before. It's probably another name for our genie. It filters reality to match our beliefs. If you believe money is scarce, your RAS system literally hides opportunities from you, not out of cruelty, but out of loyalty to what it thinks you believe. It shows you only what aligns with your internal narrative. So change the belief and the filter changes. Then there's dopamine. People who believe money is hard release stress chemistry when they think about finance. You know what that's like. If you're short on cash and you've got a bill to pay, you feel it. That shuts down creative thinking. But people who see money as value exchange, as something created and not chased, release dopamine when solving problems, which opens the part of the brain required for innovation. That comes back to my belief that there's always, always an answer, a way forward. Now let's look at metaphysics. Money is energy. It moves towards clarity, confidence, and creativity. Aren't those things that express the wealthy people you know? And it moves away from fear, guilt, and self-doubt. When you say money is hard for me, you're not just describing your life, you're programming it. We've got to stop with the crummy programming. You're giving your subconscious and the universe, your genie, instructions, and they obey, because that's the way life is set up to work. Meanwhile, when you say, I create value, and value is rewarded, you shift into alignment with how money actually works and with what you really want. You're not begging life to give you something. You're preparing yourself to receive what matches your contribution or your projection. So, practically, what do you do? Try to stop measuring your worth in hours. Measure it in outcomes. Ask yourself, what problem do I solve and for whom? And what's that worth to them? Even if you work for someone else, this still applies. Ask yourself, what value do I bring? Secondly, increase that value, not your workload. You can't earn 10 times more by working 10 times harder. You'll just go pop. But you can earn more by solving a problem that's 10 times more important. Thirdly, upgrade your financial identity. If your subconscious still sees you as just getting by, you will sabotage any level you're aiming for above that. Identity sets the ceiling. You know, people say, I get money, but it all goes out straight away, or I never get more than I really need. Ask yourself, what's your internal narrative around money? And then change that. Do you say wicked things like, I'm no good with money? Stop that nonsense. Never say that again. Detach money from morality. Money's not good or bad. It's neutral. It amplifies the intention of the person who holds it. So expect overflow. Watch how you speak about money. Never ask for just enough. Ask for plenty. Money flows to those who know how to use it and not those who fear it. Money isn't the source, you are. Money is the echo of the value you bring. Well, those are our questions for today. Please do send any questions you have in to us either at admin@coastaccessradio.org.nz or to me under the contact tab at margounlimited.com, Margot with a T. And don't forget you can listen to more episodes of Ask Margot on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Now let's finish, as we always do, with the word, our message from the universe for today. It's a good thing, I think, to allow God to have the last word in these episodes. The interesting part of this is that this message you're about to hear is so fascinating, because just after I thought this is the right one for today, my immediate next thought was to invite any of you to ask me to seek an answer to your question of the universe. What an exciting idea. I don't know, I haven't thought of it before. If you want to do that, you can write to me under the contact tab at margotunlimited.com and it will come straight to my inbox. I'll seek the answer on your behalf and we'll hear what the universe has to say to it in our next episode. Okay, here's our message for today from the Word. You must tune into your inner knowing. Not the flash necessarily, but the hint. It's often fleeting and gone in a moment of time. But you must fix on that, because that is your guidance and it is from me. When you feel flat, skeptical, uncertain, when you want to question, that is not of me. When you feel even the tiniest flash or flicker that uplifts, that is from me. Pay attention and follow these flickers as yes or no's in your life. That is what you must do in order to be led and to know. If you do not pay attention to them and see them as your guidance, you will continue to be in a state of not really knowing. Thank you for your company today, and see you next time.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.